Wherever you are, we are. Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Today is Thursday, June 19, 2014. This is News One Now with Roland Martin. Glad to be with you on this day. It is Juneteenth, state holiday in Texas. It is, of course, the day when in Texas, word got to Texas late that the Emancipation Proclamation had been signed. Took 2 years to let us know. And so former State Representative Al Edwards spearheaded the effort in Texas to have today designated as a state holiday after a number of years that actually passed. And so Texas celebrates today as a state holiday. Of course, other places around the country as well, they celebrate Juneteenth. It is the only holiday in existence that is tied to slavery. Only one. Only holiday in existence that is tied to slavery, of course, the ending of slavery. And so we certainly hope that you are going to have a great day, if you will. Also, a number of other places celebrate Juneteenth as well. In the third hour today, we're going to actually be talking about that. We're going to have an individual who keeps up with a Juneteenth database, and also a gentleman who is trying to get Juneteenth to become a federally recognized holiday. So that's what we are working on in the third hour of today's show. So again, so you want to look forward to that conversation as well. So lots of things going on. Hey, today, of course, is Single Artist Thursday. And so we'll be jamming Lil Jan Jackson all day long. So looking forward to that. So we'll see. We'll see who knows about the music of Janet Jackson. The music of Janet Jackson. I need the folks in the studio. There are no clocks on. Yes, thank you very much. Brother needs to see the time. Needs to see the time. All right, folks. Yesterday I had spent some time at the Nationals ballpark again, hanging out with the Houston Astros. So certainly enjoyed my time with those guys as well. Always good to see manager Bo Porter. Good to see him and the whole crew there. It was a good time, man. It was, you know, some folks were like complaining, ooh, it's hot out here. It did feel like a little sauna sitting out there. I mean, it wasn't like I was, you know, I'm like, it ain't like y'all gonna fall out or something. So, but it was way too funny sitting here, folks sitting there. I don't know, to be honest, I don't know how people sit outside during a baseball game in the daytime. I'm just letting y'all know. I don't see it. I don't see it. Because game lasts about 3.5 hours. But it started at 7:05, and I think it was over. It was over past. It was like over around 10:40. Baseball game supposed to last 2.5 hours? Dave says a baseball game is supposed to last 2.5 hours. See, that's part of the problem I do have with baseball. There's no time limit. I mean, basketball, 48 minutes. I miss 48 minutes. 12, 12, 12, 12. Football is what, 60 minutes? 15-minute quarters? Okay, I got it. I mean, this whole notion of, you know, you're going to be there forever, and that's the only issue there. What is the, again, I don't watch soccer. What the hell is that?
90 minutes.
90 minutes?
Damn it.
They just keep going.
Whatever.
Extra time.
Whatever.
They have stoppage time, yeah.
Oh, they have stoppage time. Whatever. Okay. All right. Ain't like I watch. I mean, y'all think I'm lying. I ain't seen a bit of. I can't tell you who won. Well, actually, I got a headline. What, Spain lost? Something like that?
Don't
mean nothing to me. Yeah, Spain lost a soccer match, and they also lost their king. All right, folks. It is 8 after the hour. We come back more. News One Now with Roland Martin. Janet Jackson all day. Time to bring the funk. Back in a moment.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
13 after the hour. Welcome back, News One Now. Yesterday, the Washington Redskins got bad news. Redskins got bad news when the U.S. Patent Office board voted 2-1 that they would have their trademark revoked based on it, the name. When the ruling they stated said that when the name was granted, when the trademark was granted, that it was an offensive name. The Redskins, the Washington Redskins football team, can appeal that. It will. They can have several years, but having your patent removed means that literally anybody could use that particular trademark, and that is they could do their own paraphernalia, shirts, or whatever, and the team would have no recourse to stop them from using it. So the question I have for you. Because what you have is you have a group of Native Americans and others who have said that that name is racist, that it should be removed. It is a slur. You've seen an increasing number of groups put pressure on the owner of the team, Dan Snyder, to change its name. Members of Congress have also weighed in. Let's play Senator Harry Reid. Senator Harry Reid of Nevada. He is the Senate Majority Leader, Nevada. Which one do they call it, Nevada or Nevada?
Nevada.
It's Nevada? Mm-hmm. I thought it was Nevada. Whatever. Okay. So, you know, whatever. All right. So, Senator Harry Reid, speaking yesterday on the floor of the U.S. Senate, he has often spoken out against this, been highly critical of the team for continuing to use the name. Dan Snyder has said before he would never, ever, in caps, change the name of the team. Here's what Reed had to say.
Church, you can do that. Yeah, there's no trademark anymore for the Redskins. Daniel Snyder may be the last person in the world to realize this, but it's just a matter of time until he's forced to do the right thing and change the name.
So the question I'm posing to you is, do you believe it is time for Dan Snyder to change the name of the Washington Redskins? Do you find the name to be offensive? Number to call is 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. I want to get your thoughts on this. It has been, like I said, it has been a contentious issue. Now, what's interesting about this is that you've had an increasing amount of support, but you have not seen sponsors pull out. You've not seen season ticket holders. I mean, the Washington Redskins is a hugely popular team in this region. Their waiting list for season tickets, 10, 12 years long? I mean, there are thousands of people on it. So do you believe, though, the team will also be hurt? I mean, look, here's the deal. From a business standpoint, businesses don't like to change their brands. McDonald's, Coca-Cola. I'll give an example. Who drinks Tropicana orange juice? Okay. Do you remember when Tropicana changed the packaging of their orange juice? This happened last year or year and a half ago. They changed the packaging. People hated the new logo and the packaging of the carton. I mean, hated it. They got ripped by folks because they changed the packaging. You might ask yourself, well, Roland, why does that really matter? Because consumers get used to a certain thing. Companies spend, when you buy a company, you're spending a lot of money for that brand. The Redskins, I believe Forbes magazine ranks them as the third or fourth most valuable franchise. And I think the number is something around $1.3 billion. So if you're Dan Snyder and you own that type of company, you know what? You are serious about your brand. And see, when you change your brand, you've got to go through a whole rebranding process. Everything changes. I mean, everything changes. And that's why I think you've seen the resistance from Dan Snyder. So give me a call, 877-373-9766. Should they change the name of the Washington Redskins, deemed offensive by others? Love to get your thoughts. 20 after the hour. Jan Jackson. This song here. You want this. This is News 1 Now, Roland Martin.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
26 after the hour. Welcome back, News 1 Now. Number to call is 877-373-9766. 877-373-9766. Do you believe the Washington Redskins should change their name? That has been, that is considered offensive by a number of people, Native Americans and others. Political leaders have also weighed in on this, saying the team should absolutely change their name. Yesterday, they got a negative decision from the U.S. Trademarks and Patent Office, where their trademark, their patent was revoked. Several of them was revoked because the ruling 2-1, it was deemed to be offensive when it was granted, and it should not have been granted. And so love to get your thoughts on the issue. Let's see here. I got a number of folks who have been weighing in. Let's see here. Chuck tweeted, first-time listener, listening via the TuneIn app. He's a blind brother from Kansas City, as he says on Twitter. He says, it's past time for the Redskins' name to change, but until there is corporate pressure, it won't happen. Let's see here. Angela Langster tweets, if the Redskins change their name, do you think the Florida State Seminoles, even though it's NCAA, change theirs as well? Alfonso Carter, yes, I've been complaining about that before it was fashionable. Native Americans need a break. Vicky Iwas tweets, yes, change the name. Want to get your thoughts. I want you to weigh in on this as well. Let's go to Houston, Texas. Miles calling. You're on News 1 Now. What's your comment?
Yeah, hello, Roland.
You're on the air.
Yes, yes. Okay, I just wanted to kind of sum up, and I don't know if it was covered already, as to why and the real reason the Redskins' name is derogatory.
Go ahead.
I believe that when the King of England, when he first came to the United States, he put out a bounty on Indians, and he paid $75 for every dead Indian that they brought into the capital. And they started bringing in too many of these dead bodies, and it started to be a problem. So he said, just bring in the hair of an Indian, and I'll pay $75. Well, then some of the white hunters started bringing in their own hair. And then he said, no, I tell you what, when you bring in the hair, make sure the red skin is attached to the hair. And that's where the name Redskin came from. So that's why it's so derogatory, and I think folks need to know the real reason why the name is so derogatory.
Okay, I appreciate it, sir. Thanks a lot. I definitely want to hear from folks in Washington, D.C. Those of you listening via WOL 1450, if you're listening in Baltimore as well, want to get you to weigh in on this. I've had some people, I saw some tweets, folks saying it's shameful that African Americans would be supportive of the name Washington Redskins. They said, knowing full well our racial history. Well, what do you think? Do you believe it is time for the Washington Redskins to change their name? Is it overdue? The number to call is 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. There have been a number of commercials done by a particular Native American tribe. In fact, the other day during the NBA Finals, they actually had a television commercial that was played during the finals as well. And you've heard again, political leaders step out. The question has been posed to Roger Goodell, who is the commissioner of the NFL. There's been lots of back and forth. In fact, there are a number of sports writers as well as sports sections of outlets, even some radio and television outlets, said they will refuse to use the name. They won't even use the name of the team. They'll only simply say the Washington football team or that team in Washington they'll come up with different things. And so does it make sense? And is this also an example? Now, I'll throw this out there, because some folks, and I've heard this, believe that this is an example of political correctness run amok. Number to call is 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. Should the Washington Redskins change their name? That's the number I want you to give me a call. Time for us to go to a break. We'll take your calls when we come back and read more of your tweets as well as comments on Facebook as well. This is News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Two, before the top of the hour, welcome back, News 1 Now. My question of the day, do you believe the Washington Redskins should change their name because it is being considered offensive by Native Americans and others? Their patent and trademark revoked yesterday. They have, of course, an appeals process. It could take several years as well, but it certainly impacts them from being able to prevent others from being able to sell their products with the name on it. Number to call is 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. Diane Allman Ward on Twitter says, if it were the Washington Rednecks with a white face logo with flaming redneck, it would not be optional. All right. Ebook Eagle Plus tweets, hi, Daniel Snyder needs to abandon his arrogant and insensitive posture and change the name. Jeff Stafford tweets, in debate, name changes, derogatory terms, faithful should remember the cross was an emblem of shame and Christians was damning the slur. All right. And let's see here. We also have, let me go to Facebook here. Shanna Dixon, my question is, why just this is on Facebook. Why just the Redskins? There are other teams with Native American names or as mascots. Why not ask all of the teams to change their names if it's because the name is offensive? Tiffany Williams, good point. However, the name and the logo is offensive. The mascot has slick back hair and big teeth looking like some grinning fool. We can't tell a specific group of people how to feel about things. Just like those darn white folks can't tell black folks how to feel about slavery or the use of the N-word. Okay. All right. How do you actually feel? Gotcha. Also, in just a few minutes, actor Jeffrey Wright is going to be giving us a call because he's been talking about this on Twitter. And in fact, people have been criticizing him. In fact, Zerlina Maxwell sent out a tweet where she said that, let's see, she's talked about the name being offensive. And he responded, he said, well, I don't think you quite understand the history. And he's actually said this. And so he's actually in Berlin. So as soon as Noni sends me the call-in number, I am going to send it to Jeffrey. And of course, he's from this area as well. And so he's in Berlin, and he is going to weigh in on this topic. And so we look forward to chatting with him a bit. But I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you right now. I really want to hear the folks from Washington, folks listening via WOL, because there's some people are like, again, Zerlina Maxwell, who is a journalist out of New York, she said she finds it horrible that African-Americans are not as outraged, that they should be as outraged about this issue as anybody. She said that African-Americans should not be quiet, should stand up, should be in concert with Native Americans against this particular name. She says that for African-Americans to be supportive of this name is wrong, that it should not be the case. The number to call, 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. I'm going to go to a break right now. We come back. We'll be chatting with actor Jeffrey Wright. He has talked about this issue, the name of the Washington Redskins, on social media a number of times. And he has said other people don't truly understand the real history. So when we come back, we will hear from him. He'll be calling us from Berlin. Folks, this is News One Now with Roland Martin. Back in a moment.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
11 before the hour. Welcome back, News One Now. He is one of the best actors you've ever seen. Stage, small screen, big screen. He is born and raised in this area here, the nation's capital. He's actor Jeffrey Wright calling in from Berlin. What up, Jeff?
I'm good, Roland. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. We're talking about this Washington Redskins issue, and I've seen several of your tweets, and folks have taken exception. You talked about the actual history. And so when you hear, and I saw the Zelina Maxwell tweet, and you responded to her, when you said, look, you don't really understand the history. And so from your perspective, weigh in on this issue.
Well, I mean, I think there are a lot of things going on. I think it's a really fascinating debate. It's bigger than football. It's about history, as you described. It's about language. It's about how we view color. I think the Redskins organization may have made a few mistakes along the way, though, in trying to sort through this situation. And I think, to some degree, they have positioned themselves now as the white settler, and so I don't know if they're going to be able to extract themselves out of this. There are generations and generations of mistrust and damage that are informing this dialogue, and that's just the way it is. You have to be sensitive to that. At the same time, however, I think in some ways there's a bit of a misshaping of the argument. I am all in for the fight that says this is about misappropriation of Native imagery, Native cultural references, all of these things that you've, destroyed the culture, destroyed the history, destroyed the land, destroyed these people. Now you take these images and you celebrate them as though they're your own, with no connection to these communities and to these peoples. I think that needs to be addressed. You can't use these images and not give back in some way or have some real connection to the source of them without it being, clearly, a case of misappropriation and theft. But the argument that says that this word, Redskins, is absolutely, categorically, without exception, racist, I think is off. Because if you go back and look at the history, you find that it's a much more complex origin than you might suppose. And also, you look at Washington, D.C. I grew up in Southeast D.C., minutes from RFK Stadium, Chocolate City. I think black folks tend to look at race and color in a different way than white racists. So the word red or the colorization of skin doesn't necessarily imply a pejorative or a negative in most black folks' minds. If you think back, there's always somebody in the neighborhood who you call red. Look at Detroit Red, Red Fox. But these weren't pejorators, and they related to color of hair, color of skin, going back to the whole, thing that we all have native. Somebody's got a cousin, uncle, grandmother who was born on a reservation. And I understand that, a lot of that may be apocryphal. But I'm suggesting that when black folks look at this color and when D.C., Southeast D.C. Redskins fan, look at that name, like myself, we didn't see a negative. We saw something that was closer to our skin color than any other of the mascots in the NFL, whether they be Cowboys, 49ers, Packers, Patriots. It wasn't Crispus Attucks on that helmet, but on the Redskins logo was this brown skin, red-skinned image that I think we related to in a different way than people are perceiving.
So, Jeffrey, how do you explain, though, folks who say, well, the name comes from the taking of Native American scalps, and that's the origin of it.
The origin of it goes beyond that. Folks are pointing to documents, and again, man, there is no arguing that there was not horror visited upon the Native people of this land, just as horror was visited on those Africans who got on those ships and were brought over to this land to work and build up this country. There's no arguing, and nobody wants to get into a competition about who suffered more or who didn't suffer. We understand that. I've seen documents pointed to that say, hey, here's an example of where it says...
Hey, Jeffrey, hold tight one second. I'm going to a break right now, and I want you to explain this. As soon as we come back from this break, I want you to explain that particular point, because I think it really is important so people understand this issue versus I saw a tweet, I heard a soundbite. Folks, we're talking with Jeffrey Wright, of course, grew up in Southeast D.C., actor calling in from Berlin, talking about the Washington Redskins name, the history, things along those lines, should it be changed, right here on News One Now, back in five.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Welcome back, News One Now. We're talking about the changing of the Washington Redskins name. Their patents have been revoked. And people, again, there's been lots of debate and discussion. Pressure has been intensified on owner Dan Snyder. And different folks are weighing in. And I was reading the tweets of Jeffrey Wright, the actor, native of Southeast D.C., and he's really engaged other people to say, no, you need to understand the history. Jeffrey, before we went to the break, you were talking about that. So go ahead and pick up on your point.
Yeah. My point is, listen, nobody's arguing that there hasn't been, incredible crimes, committed against Native American people, just as against African people who came to work in this as slaves in this country. But if you go back and look at the origin of the word, there's something a little more subversive there than you might expect. People are pointing to documents saying it says, well, certain number of Redskins were hanged or are to be hanged for their crimes. Or the scalp of a Redskin will receive such and such bounty. Understood that you have these references in these documents. But likewise, you can go and find documents that say 13 Negroes were hanged for their crime against such and such. it doesn't imply that the word Negro is a slur. Likewise, it doesn't necessarily imply that the word redskin originated or was a slur. It was an identifier. But what I found interesting, because at one point for me, I said to myself years ago, I said, you know, maybe we need to change this name. And then as the debate heated up and I hear all these pseudo-liberal journalists no longer able to say the word redskin, and I went, whoa, let me step back here and look at this. So I started to research because I wanted to ask myself, was there no reference anywhere to be found of a Native American himself historically referring to his people as redskins? So you go back to the origin, and what you realize is the first published usage of the word was actually from a Meskwaki chief, who described his people as the red skin and the brown skin collectively formed and organized to negotiate against the white skin. So it was actually used to organize and empower. The term was a self-identifier because out of their mythology, their creation mythology, comes the idea that they were crafted from the red clay earth. And so it's a celebration of color as opposed to an exploitation or a term used to infer that color is inferior. And I think the danger is, just from a linguistic standpoint, and I understand I'm being myopic talking about language here, but is that we necessarily think when we hear colorization of skin or colorization of people, that it implies a negative and that it was originated by white racists. In fact, in this case, the first published usages say it was the opposite. And it was used to subvert. It was used not in the way the word nigger was, but perhaps more closely to the way the words Black Panther was. So I'm just saying, step back and look at the complexities before you respond in a way that may be informed by dynamics that you're not even aware of. I think it's a fascinating debate. I think it's bigger than football. And for me personally, when I was looking at those images as a kid, growing up, they never meant something disparaging of Native people. It was always something that I identified with very closely and celebrated. And and I recognize, too, that you can say the same perhaps about Chief Wahoo and this minstrel image, coon image Native that they have in Cleveland. But I thought there was something else going on with that, with the Redskins imagery that was a little more powerful than that. So that's all,
Right.
At the same time, going back, though, this misappropriation story is an important one. But to argue that word is only racist, I think, is to view it through the lens of a white racist.
Great point there, Jeffrey. Well, it is very interesting that, look, you know what happens in this day and age of Twitter, Facebook, folks simply don't actually read, don't actually research, don't actually go through that. And so I think your take is certainly a strong one there, and hopefully folks will listen and pay attention to it. And as we always say, foster discussion, because at the end of the day, you need to be able to understand it. Look, man, I know you're in Berlin.
Just say one last thing, Roland, is about the misappropriation thing. And I think, the Native, the point from the Native community that you're not honoring us, you're not celebrating us. You know, you have, like, folks like up in Illinois, Chief Willenneck or whatever his name was, doing, like, rockets, kicks, and calling it Native dances. I think it's terrible, horrible. He's gone. But I think there's an opportunity, and I would love to see it realized, for this team to actually be a genuine, authentic celebration of Native cultures. You saw President Obama up on the reservation up in the Dakotas just last week. Gorgeous cultures, gorgeous ceremonies, gorgeous history, gorgeous people, tragic but gorgeous, beautiful celebrations. Why can't we include some of this authentic Native representation within this team? So that it actually is uplifting. It actually is a celebration of the beauty, the history, and it reminds us in Washington, D.C., that yes, this is the nation's capital, but but there is a ghost in our history that is represented in these living people that we should remember, and remember it on the highest stage, one of the biggest stages in our country, and that is the NFL. I think it's a huge opportunity that could be realized if done right. Be a lot of work, have to take careful planning, but I think it's tremendously exciting.
All right, Jeffrey Wright, I appreciate it, bro. Thanks a lot.
All right, man.
Thank you. Folks, give me a call, 877-373-9766. Back on News One Now in a moment.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
14 after the hour. Welcome back, News One Now. Number to call is 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. Give me a call, your take on the Redskins name. Do you find it offensive? What did Jeffrey Wright have to say? Do you think that folks are responding with little information? Love to get your take. Let's go to Bernadette from Cincinnati, Ohio, listening via WDBZ 1230 The Buzz. You're on News One Now.
Hey, Roland, how are you?
I'm doing great.
You know, you know what? They like to take the imagery that's given in America and say, you know, it's like a holiday or it's meant for something good. But actually, it was a tragedy what happened with the Indians. And I like to show them with us also, because, like, in the book of Revelation, it talks about God having hair of wool, feet of brass, eyes of fire. And for a long time, blacks have associated that with ourselves. You know, and I think the Holy Word Bible and the Holy Church Bible used to speak of a people with brass feet, or called us bronze altars. Well, a lot of Bibles have removed that, but bottom line, it was the image. And I think that, you know, the Europeans, everything in their system, from the obelisk of ancient Egypt being in Washington, you know, is the image of a people who in America would not be a people. And I think because they used us and the Indians as well as a rite of passage, this it's easy to say the people should be celebrated, but when people are actually killed off in order to recreate something, do they not deserve reparation like anybody else?
Okay. All right, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Number to call, 877-373-9766. You know, it's very telling how quiet people are on this issue, especially folks who are listening from Washington, D.C. And I think it shows you that this is not, for a lot of people, a major issue. It's not. And I think that's one of the reasons why Dan Snyder also hasn't changed the name. Because it has not resonated or risen to that level. That's why, I mean, I'm just being straight up. I just don't think that this issue has gotten to that level. I don't think that this issue truly is outraging a significant number of people. We talk about a whole lot of stuff on this show, and I can always tell what strikes the passion of people and how they get fired up and motivated. The fact that I haven't had a single person call from Washington, D.C., or from Baltimore, or from Maryland is very telling. It's very telling. And I think that that the only way Dan Snyder changes this name is if it truly reaches critical mass. And guess what? It hasn't. It has not reached that level. It has not reached that level. 877-373-9766. 877-373-9766. Certainly want to get your thoughts on this. And it is very interesting. In fact, see, Tim from D.C. just called. And so I'm going to take his phone call when we come back. You can weigh in as well. I'm really interested in knowing the folks who are, and maybe part of this is because folks are Washington Redskins fans. They don't want to see their team name changed. But I really do want to hear folks from D.C., Maryland, Virginia, who are fans of the team. I want you to weigh in on this potential name change. Should it happen? 877-373-9766. 877-373-9766. This is News One Now with Roland Martin.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
25 at the hour. Welcome back, News One Now. Let's go right to the phone lines. Tim from Washington, D.C. You're on News One Now. What up?
Yeah, how you doing?
All good.
Okay, good. I think Dan Snyder should not change the name, Redskins. If he did change the skins, but I think he got a thing in it and the name should not be changed. I can't understand why the folks are upset, why Native Americans are upset. I really don't. Where were they when we were winning Super Bowl? Didn't hear anything. We're having bad seasons, a couple of seasons now. People crying by the name. No, the name should not be changed.
Okay.
And I'm done.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Let's go to Jim also from the nation's capital. Jim, you're on News One Now. What's up?
Yeah, I'm calling, man, because you say you don't think that enough people are really concerned about it.
Yes, yes. No, what I said was if this reached critical mass, if I had to use a comparison to Donald Sterling or some other issues, when you begin to have season ticket holders and sponsors, when you begin to have widespread outrage that changes the dynamic, this has not reached that level. Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, let me comment, Mr. Martin. You know, I feel like this name change is approaching, that's toppling that white supremacy. It's because I know the Redskins were named by that racist white male, because the team comes from Boston. And, you know, you got a lot of football fans. The majority, if you look around the stadium, the majority of football fans are white males, right? They rowdy. They join. It's a very violent sport. And I've been in D.C. all my life, and I was cheering for the Redskins in the 80s when they had the Hogs, the Fun Bunch, all that stuff. But as I got older and mature, right, I began to become a little more sensitive. Why would you identify any group by their skin color? Now, if a particular group chooses to identify themselves by skin color, that's different. But if another group is identifying another group by their skin color, you can best believe it's in mockery. You know, you got the Vikings. I mean, they glamorize. The Vikings were nothing but a group of white folks that rode the seas robbing people. They glamorized that. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they glamorized that. The Pittsburgh Pirates, they glamorized that. It's that white male that keep riding around thinking he's going to reign supreme over this earth that everybody is offended by. The Redskins, the Indians in this country, have the highest rate of teenage suicide. They got a high rate of alcoholism. You know, that white male came and took their land, man, and they offended by it. I'm going to listen. Thank you.
All right. I appreciate it, sir. Thank you so very much. Let's go to Phyllis. Let's go to Marty, also in Washington, D.C. Marty, you're on News One Now. What's your comment?
Mr. Martin, how you doing this morning?
All good.
Okay. I've been following this football team since I was growing up as a little boy in D.C. back in the mid-1960s. And over time, I have evolved. And for the last several years, I realized that the name of this team should be changed because it's offensive. Even if it's offensive to one person, and I know it's offensive to several Native Americans, but the name should be changed. I'm also not surprised at the number of black folks who claim that they follow this team, just like you had a call about two calls ago who said that the name should not be changed. It's a number of black folks who feel just like that man. They don't, for whatever reason, they don't understand that it's an offensive term and that the name should be changed. So I think it should be changed. Snyder is saying he's not going to change it. But if fair was fair, they need to change the name of this team.
Okay. I appreciate it, sir. Thank you very much. Let's go to Phyllis. Is it Phyllis? In Cleveland, Ohio.
Hello?
Hey, Phyllis, listening via WERE. What's up?
Yes, good morning, Roland. Now, I live in Cleveland, Ohio, and we have a similar problem with the Cleveland Indians. You know, they have a horrible logo, Chihuahua, which I think is very offensive. But, you know, the majority of people in Cleveland, you know, who are white, you know, like says that, you know, they believe the logo, there's nothing wrong with the logo, it's a tradition, blah, blah, blah. You know, it supposedly honors a Native American. But my opinion is that if this offensive to one Native American, that's enough for me. Because my opinion does not matter. It's only the opinion of the people who are offended. That opinion should be taken into consideration, not anyone else's. Because they're the ones who are being offended. So the Redskins, that's an offensive logo. And it doesn't matter to me how many black people support it, how many white people support it. If Native Americans, even if it's just a fraction of Native Americans who don't support it, of course it should be removed. Just like with Chief Wahoo. Now,
if
y'all, anyone to find those logos or those names, not to
give them.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a bunch. Daryl, Washington, D.C., you're on News One Now. What's up, Daryl?
Hey, Fowl, my brother. Good morning.
What's happening?
Hey, so, Roland, I just think that this people should think about this as people over profits. This is all about profit at the end of the day. And black folk who want to go along and think that it's okay to have the Washington Redskins, I just ask you to think about it. What if there was a team called the Tennessee Cotton Pickers? What would you think then?
Now, here's the deal. You have heard what Jeffrey Wright outlined from his perspective based upon what his research is. So the question I ask you is, if you have differing viewpoints on this issue, if you have a Wright who says the first identifier of Redskin came from someone who was a Native American chief. Now you have folks who say, well, no, it meant scalps. Is part of the problem, a lot of people have no idea, frankly, where it comes from? Part of the problem? I mean, the reality, answer the question, do you believe that people are even educated on this issue?
I don't think people are educated on the issue. And I believe that the Native American tribes should begin to be more vocal and express where they sit on this issue. And I understand that, you know, there's a handful, maybe six or seven Native Americans who sued over the name and the trademarks. But, you know, I haven't heard from tribes or the nation state of the natives to explain really how they feel about this. So I really don't know.
Okay. All right, I certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot. 877-373-9766. 877-373-9766. Take more of your phone calls. We come back 28 before the top of the hour. This is News One Now with Roland Martin.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Welcome back, News One Now with Roland Martin. We're talking about the Washington Redskins, the changing of the name, whether or not you believe it should be changed. Not only are you telling me about call screener, but I don't have any calls on here. Okay, there we go. All right, then, because no, now it came up there. So, all right, folks, give me a call, 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. Should the name, the Washington Redskins, be changed? Patents have been revoked. There's been criticism from Native Americans, from political leaders. It has ratcheted up. I still believe it has not reached critical mass. That's why Dan Snyder is resisting. And I was very specific. I really want to hear from folks from D.C., from Virginia, from Maryland, because this is the base of this is the stronghold for the team. I want to get your thoughts, Joyce, Washington D.C. You're on News One Now. What's up?
Hi, Roland. I used to work for the National Museum of the American Indian, and I found out then exactly what, you know, I used to get all the pictures and stuff, but. I found out that, I know you heard about this, when they would scalp an Indian and bring his part of his scalp back and it would be red because it's bloodied, they said that's where they got red skin from.
Well, again, and that's when Jeffrey Wright was on earlier, he talked about a different story as well. And I think that's part of the deal. And I think people, it would be best served for folks to be educated to understand what's going on, to understand what's happening. And that's part of the issue.
I just wanted to say one more thing. I think something, God or spirit or something, is in agreement with being against it, because they haven't been able to win a game, and I don't know when. And I think they will continue to be under a no-winning spell until they change that name.
Okay. All
right.
I certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Well, first of all, remember that they did win Super Bowls with a name. So this whole notion of they're going to be under some spell unless they change the name, sorry. I mean, how many titles have the Redskins won? Three or four? That one doesn't really. Five, that one doesn't really work. Jimmy, Norfolk, Virginia, you're on News One Now. What's up?
Good morning, Roland. How you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
Nothing much, man. I'm calling in about this name change for the Washington Redskins. I mean, I'm a Redskin fan, diehard, all hail to the Redskins. And I can't understand for the life of me why these people's making a big thing about the Washington Redskins. When, if you look at the history, it was an Indian that actually gave the Redskins their name. And it's not a racial slur. It's just the name of a NFL football team. I mean, what's the problem about that? And it's been called the Washington Redskins ever since the 1930s or 33 or something like that. Now here it is in 2014, all of a sudden it become a racial slur, and we got politicians weighing in on it, which they should be basically trying to weigh in on something else, take care of what's really going on in the country other than worried about changing the name of the Washington Redskins.
Okay. I appreciate it, sir. Thanks a bunch. You know, this really is, I think, an interesting topic, because what it does is it really does expose a lot of people to the fact that we don't understand our history. We don't understand how we've gotten here. We don't understand the origins of things, that we just sort of see it and we accept it. And for a lot of people, just accepting it means I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want. And see, the reason sports is also so different, because we take our sports teams very personal, because we grew up with them. We watched them on television. Some of us gone to the games. We worship the players. Our sports teams identify us. It becomes a tribe, if you will. I'm a Redskins fan. I'm a Cowboys fan. I'm a Texans fan. I'm a Titans fan. I'm a Ravens fan. I'm an Eagles, a Giants fan. Oh, I'm a Virginia Tech Hokie. I'm a Texas A&M Aggies fan. You got folks who even go to schools who say they're fans. And we're very, very protective of this. Folks, there's a reason the NFL is a $9 billion a year entity. There's a reason they have a level of loyalty that is unmatched by any other professional sport. Major League Baseball can't compare to the NFL. Hockey can't compare. The NBA can't compare. Soccer cannot compare. Now, if you want to say, oh, soccer is this worldwide phenomenon, fine. But we're talking about leagues in America, the NFL, the Shield, absolutely dominant. And again, until you have critical mass, the name is going to stay the same. The Redskins are going to fight this. The only way that name changes sooner than later is you're going to have corporate sponsors, you're going to have season ticket holders and others pull out. Simple as that. That's the only way. 16 before the top of the hour. This is News One Now with Roland Martin. Back in the morning.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
11 before the top of the hour. Welcome back, News One Now. Yo, I am absolutely cracking up. cracking up at these people on this whole issue of my brother's keeper. I got these PhDs, boy. I some people are so smart they're dumb. Let me repeat that. Some people are so smart that they are dumb. So all these people are sitting here talking about, I got these two PhD candidates who call themselves male womanist or whatever. And they're sitting here going, because we're gonna, in the next hour, we're gonna have the conversation about my brother's keeper. Here's what I don't understand. Okay, so this, the two brothers are saying, I'm sexist because I want my brother's keeper to be just for brothers. But I've also said, I believe there should be a targeted initiative for sisters. So if that's the case, does that make me sexist? I'm trying to understand. If I believe there should be a targeted initiative for brothers, I'm sexist because it does not include women. But if I support a targeted initiative for sisters, let's say my sister's keeper, then I'm not sexist because it doesn't include men. Lord, these people are utterly hilarious. I'm telling you, I've been on Twitter with these, and then I got some dude goes by Black Exodus, calls himself a seer, a critical thinker, a male womanist, an aspiring PhD, JD candidate. But you a new fool. You a new fool. And so then I made my point about the whole deal, if I oppose it. So here's this other new fool, this dude, Imahan Campbell or whatever, PhD candidate in the Dubois department, a Mellon fellow, former visiting fellow at the American Antiquarian Society. Same thing. I make that argument. He goes, you make it seem as if there's equivalence in oppression. Oh, Lord. See, here we go. So basically what he's saying is that because of decades, centuries of male suppression, I'm sexist for supporting a male-only initiative, but I'm not sexist for supporting a women-only initiative. Women-only initiative. Okay, glad we got that cleared up. I'm telling you, these people are hilarious. See, all these little PhD people, these ivory tower people, this is the deal. Ivory tower, not all of them, but a lot of ivory tower people spend so much time in the ivory towers, they ain't walked on the street in a while. So the next hour, we're going to have that conversation. Also, Pastor Corey Brooks will come on. We'll be chatting with him about putting 5,000 men on 500 street corners in Chicago this summer to stem the violence there as well. We'll also, of course, it's What the Hell Thursday, and we'll break that thing down for you. You know, that's going to be lots of fun as well. So, folks, buckle up. It's going to be a great, great time for us with the show. I'm telling you, but y'all going to really, listen. Y'all gonna really crack up to some of this stuff. So I'm telling you, this whole idea, and here's what I don't get. There is a White House office on women and girls. I say it consistently. Why not launch an initiative targeting women of color through that existing office? How is that a bad idea? Oh, but all these people are like, no. It has to be through my brother's keeper. Why? There's already a White House office on women and girls. It already exists. It's already there. It's all. I'm telling these folks are absolutely hilarious. Y'all don't miss that conversation. Listen via this radio station. You're listening via the TuneIn or Black Planet app. We appreciate it. If you want to watch, turn to TV One. It's going to be fascinating. Single Artist Thursday. Janet Jackson. We've been jamming her all day. Time for me to go to the break. I'm Roland Martin. What, Noni? Whatever. I'm Roland Martin. This is News One Now. Back in 5 minutes.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Play on News One Now. I talked about Christian men stepping up to hit the street corners to stem the violence in Chicago. Pastor Corey Brooks answered that call. We'll talk to him about it. A lot of sisters, more than 1,000, signed a letter saying that President Obama's My Brother's Keeper should include women and girls. But some, like me, disagree. We'll continue that debate today. Plus, a man tries to throw a football stuffed with drugs into a prison yard. Yeah, y'all know it's What the Hell Thursday. All that and more coming up right now on News One Now. You've often heard me talk about the issue of Chicago violence on this show and on others. And of course, well, I have challenged police officials to do their part, for the White House to do their part as well, but also for the people living in those neighborhoods to do their part. If you go back to the Civil Rights Movement, there was something called in terms of the brothers who were deacons of defense. And what they did was they actually took up arms to protect black neighborhoods from the Klan. They had chapters all across the South. Now, my suggestion is not that we have folks take up arms to become vigilantes. But what I am saying, though, is that we should have brothers hit the street corners all across Chicago and say, let's talk to these young brothers. Let's have a visible presence in order to stem the violence. We had the discussion a couple of months ago on radio, and Pastor Corey Brooks was one of the folks following me on Twitter. And he said, you know what? We should do that. Pastor Corey Brooks said, we're going to actually step up. So over the last 3 months, what he has been doing, Pastor Corey Brooks of New Beginnings Church in Chicago, what he has been doing is saying, we want 5,000 men to step up and sign up to stand on 500 street corners in the hot spots in Chicago. What that means literally is talking to those brothers, actually speaking to them, trying to have a visible presence. It's actually having the community take back the community, but not just brothers on the block, but also sisters on the street. And so what this has been about is really causing the people in Chicago to say, it's time to take back our neighborhoods from these thugs who are running rampant all across the city. And so joining us right now is Pastor Corey Brooks from Chicago. Pastor, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Roland. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine. We had some technical issues there. I'm glad that we have you. So we talked about this on radio. You said, Roland, we heed the call. We're going to do it. And so how is it going thus far? Have you hit your goal of 5,000?
No, we haven't hit our goal of 5,000, but we're well on our way. We have 2,200 women signed up. We have 1,700 men signed up, and we're rolling right along. So we're anticipating everyone getting signed up.
And look, the reason, I mean, this is not about ego with one person or one church or anything, but what it really is saying to the people who live in these neighborhoods, you have to be participants in this. We need you engaging with folks. We need you having a presence in order to make it clear that that the thugs cannot control the neighborhoods. Too many of our kids are dying because too many of us are silent.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it's about, Roland. We believe that if we get involved in the neighborhood, get it engaged, and also affirm and accept and approve some of these young people, we can make things a whole lot better. So we're really working hard to make a place where the community is a community, and where we're pouring into.
Okay, we lost Corey Brooks there in terms of the Skype. What we will do, we will hear from him, have him back on the phone there. So, folks, let me know when we have him back up. But again, folks, we have seen significant violence in Chicago. According to the various stats, homicides are up 11% in Chicago, despite the overall 17% crime drop. The majority of the shootings and killings are taking place in the poorest neighborhoods in Chicago, largely African-American, South Side of Chicago, West Side of Chicago, in the Inglewood community, and so many others. And so, folks, going beyond even those particular neighborhoods, What you have is you literally have a change of culture in Chicago. You have the housing projects that came down several years ago. Now you have folks who are dispersed all over Chicago. You have crime that has ramped up in the suburbs, the southern suburbs of Chicago as well. It is an epidemic. And we do these stories every single Monday or Tuesday talking about 28 and 30 and 40 shot in Chicago, 3, 4, 5, 8 people who are killed in Chicago. And it's a problem. It's a problem that must be solved by political leaders. It's a problem that must be solved by community leaders. It's a problem that must be solved by civil rights activists. Also solved by politicians. But the people who live there must also step up. Because the reality is this, the individuals who are committing these crimes, the individuals who are doing the shooting, they are somebody's children. They have mothers, they have fathers, they have grandmothers, and they have grandfathers. And so at some point, we can't just simply say it's somebody else's problem. Look, I know we've heard all these different things, that if this was happening to white kids, that would be an outcry all across the country. Well, guess what? It's not happening. It's largely happening to black and Hispanic kids. And there's nothing more shameful to see a 5, 6, and 7-year-old simply riding down the street, riding their bike, walking to the park, gunned down. But not just that. There's stories in Chicago literally of individuals who were in their homes who also have been died. And Pastor Corey Brooks, that's what really gets to me when you have parents who are doing the right thing. Their kids are just playing, or the kids are actually in the house, and they still end up dead.
Yeah, you know, it hurts a lot of people that here in Chicago, we're trying to do the very best we can to make sure that we have a productive life for everyone. But it's really tough when you live in an area where gunshots are happening all the single time, and, you know, it makes it difficult for kids to even go outside and play. But if we continue to work hard and collaborate together, all of us gang up on the problems that are gang up on each other, we can get this done. I really do believe that our young people are valuable, and even though they're misdirected and misled, we can turn this around.
Here's what bothers me. You said 2,200 women have signed up, 1,700 men have signed up. What has been the response from the other churches in Chicago? Are they saying, hey, I'm not getting involved as a Pastor Corey's thing? Or do you have other preachers who are saying, we're going to drive this message home as well to have our brothers also stand with you and the other men who've signed up?
You know, at first it was kind of slow, but now we have a lot of churches that have been signing on, a lot of sororities and fraternities, which is really good. But I'm really excited because, you know, churches are coming together. So I look forward to the next couple of weeks because I really do believe that as the church gets more involved, we're going to be able to reach our goal of 5,000 men and 5,000 women. But it was a little slow starting off, but pastors are joining in every day, churches are joining in every day, and I know we're going to reach our goal.
Well, Pastor Brooks, look, as somebody who, again, we talked about it on the radio, and you said, hey, Roland, we're going to heed that call. We're going to put it together. I thank you for following through with that. Anything I can do to help with that, and would certainly encourage these brothers to sign up because, look, we have far too many funerals, far too many brothers who are going to prison. It's time for us to really push this effort and say, let's take back our streets, take back our neighborhoods in order to save our kids.
And, you know, Roland, they can go to projecthood.org and sign up. And I want to say thank you for really pushing it, and thank you for giving us the concept and idea. We greatly appreciate it here in the city of Chicago.
All right, Corey, thanks a lot. Have a good one, Pastor Brooks.
Thanks, brother.
Folks, coming up, is the White House dissing black girls but not including them in the president's My Brother's Keeper program? Or should sisters be saying we should be seeing more from the White House office on women and girls? We have that debate coming up next. Also, today is Juneteenth, otherwise known as the real Independence Day for African Americans. How do you plan to celebrate? All of that coming up next on News One Now, 8 after the hour, right here on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now. with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
So yesterday, folks, you heard my commentary dealing with the criticism over the president's My Brother's Keeper initiative. More than 1,000 sisters signed a letter saying that it should be more inclusive and it should include girls of color. Of course, it was announced in February, and they recently completed their main report. This has led to lots of discussion because another group of sisters wrote their own letter saying, no, they believe My Brother's Keeper should be very specific to just boys of color. And so we wanted to have that conversation, an extended conversation today talking about this. And so we look forward to that. So right now I want to introduce our panel. We have Rosa Clemente. She is via New York from Skype. She's one of the folks who signed that particular letter by the 1,000 women of color. Mary Frances Berry, Angela Davis, and others signed that particular letter. Joining me in studio, Brandon Andrews, a legislative consultant with My Brother's Keeper, and also Lisa Sharon Harper, Senior Director of Sojourners. And so I want to thank everybody for joining me on this discussion. Rosa, I want to start with you because let me read from the letter. According to the letter that was sent, this open letter to the president, it said, quote, the need to acknowledge the crisis facing boys should not come at the expense of addressing the stunted opportunities for girls who live in the same households, suffer in the same schools, and struggle to overcome a common history of limited opportunities caused by various forms of discrimination. Letter goes on to say, while we fully agree that much work is needed to improve the lives of Black women and girls, we also know it is vitally important that the My Brother's Keeper initiative stays focused on men and boys of color. Black men and boys are dying out of season on the streets of our nation every day. There's a fierce urgency of now that calls for decisive, targeted action to address this crisis in our community. So this actually, the second one I read was actually the letter that dealt with, to exclude girls. That actually piece was written by Melanie Campbell, the Rand Huffington Post. So that's actually, it separated those two. So Rose, I want to go to you. Is the point to include girls of color in My Brother's Keeper, or is it to say there should be a separate initiative targeting girls of color?
Yes. So first, Roland, thank you for having me on, as the Twitter sphere is not often the most humane place to have these kind of discussions. And actually in Amherst, Massachusetts, where I am a colleague of Brother Iman Campbell, who's actually doing his dissertation on mass incarceration in before 1865, and particularly studying Black men. So I kind of just wanted to shout him out because I know what you said about Iman, and he's my colleague here within the Du Bois Department, both PhD candidates. As a scholar activist, let me be very clear that I think the larger issue to this, and I think this is how it could be framed for further discussion and solutions, is maybe the White House hasn't done enough for particularly young people of color in the past 6 years. But this initiative, when it first came out, Roland, let's be real, there were a lot of men as well from all corners of society, Black, Latino, Native American, South Asian brothers, right? That stepped up pretty quickly and said, wait, this is a huge initiative, but our problems as a community will not be solved by just solving problems of half the community. And in fact, it was a letter 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, that 200 Black and Latino men put out. And in the letter, they said, the claim that the White House Council on Women and Girls captures the experiences of Black and brown girls and women is tantamount to saying that a White House project on boys and men would capture the experiences of Black brown boys and men. The same logic should then apply to Black brown girls and women. We want the president to launch a project like MBK on behalf of Black brown women and girls, or include Black brown girls. Now let me tell you, that came from 200 men.
Gotcha.
But they put that out on their own.
But here's the issue here. Here's the thing that jumps out at me. I don't want to go to the panel here. Is look, I understand that. But first of all, a letter from 200 men. I can tell you, I've had more than 200 people respond on Twitter who actually believe in the initiative. Brandon, I want to go to you first.
Sure.
One, the initiative hasn't even been finalized. The first 90 days was really the town halls going across the country, getting perspectives on what it should actually be.
Right. So
The first 90 days were spent doing listening sessions and then doing something that I think is vitally important, which is collecting the data that's going to be necessary to set the benchmarks, to set the KPIs, and then to be able to measure our progress. Key performance indicators for the programs that this $200 million investment from foundations and private sources has pushed forward. And so the 90-day report came out, and the thing is, all of the innovation, all of the positive things that were done in this first 90 days in terms of collecting the data, understanding where the gaps in the data are, and then understanding how to push it out on a consistent basis, all of those things will help Black women and girls, women and girls of color as well. It's not just a thing for Black men and boys, or for boys and men of color.
But so, Lisa, I want to go to you before I quickly go to a break in the next minute. On this particular point, Rosa made, and she said, when talking in terms of White House hasn't done enough. Mm-hmm. The point that I've made is, in the first 90 days, the president created this White House Office on Women and Girls.
Right.
To me, if you think the office is not doing what it should be doing, then to me, the open letter or any other criticism should be, all right, change that. So in essence, you have a mechanism in place to actually address the issue. The question is, do you use that or do you say, oh, let's actually include them in my brother's keeper? Your response.
Well, I think, Roland, that, you know, the president did, on the very first day of his presidency, sign the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, and then opened the Council on Women and Girls, and then Hillary Clinton went around the world lifting up the cause of women and girls. We actually have initiatives already in place, and I talked with someone in the White House, someone close to the White House, about this, and they said that the My Brother's Keeper initiative is actually going to lay the groundwork for just exactly what we're talking about, for extending the kind of targeted service, the kind of targeted initiative to other people groups. But we're starting here. You have to have a starting place.
Hold tight. 1 second. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Rosa Clemente, with Lisa, and also with Brandon. Folks, you can also respond to us on Twitter at News1 or at Roland S. Martin. We'll certainly read some of those tweets when we come back as well. 20 after the hour. This is News 1 Now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
All right, folks, welcome back to News 1 Now. We got lots of people who are talking about this. First of all, of course, there's the My Brother Keepers hashtag. You also have the Why We Can't Wait hashtag. And Lauren Victoria Burke, who's often on the show, she has this question for Rosa Clemente. Asked her to name one stat. I want to go to my iPad here. Can y'all pull it up? Want to go name one stat where boys, or she probably means Black boys, are ahead of girls. So Rosa, I want to answer that question in a moment. And this is what is happening here. This is turned into this whole idea of, well, it's Black girls versus Black boys. It's Black men versus Black women. I got these people saying, oh, you're sexist because you support this boys only initiative. And I said, yeah, but I'm the same one who will support a sisters only initiative. Because Rosa, the reality is, having a targeted program, we've seen them before. Right now, look, I didn't get upset with the Office on Women and Girls or the White House when they had the women in STEM program. And so how do we get folks to the point of saying, no, it's not a question of saying you're sexist. It's simply you can have a targeted program towards a particular group who needs assistance.
Okay, again, right? You are correct in that assessment. No one is saying not to have My Brother's Keepers. What we're also saying is, why does it always have to start with the boys and men when you can look at many indicators that show that African American, Latina women are suffering some of the same issues at the same level that Black men and Black boys. And one of them is that the fastest, largest growing group in the mass incarceration system is African American and Latina women.
Lisa wants to respond to that. Lisa?
Yeah, I think, Rosa, I really do respect your opinion, but I have to say, I was talking with a good friend of mine, best friend actually, in elementary school, and she has a brother, and they come from a middle class family. We're talking like doctor was father was a doctor, mother was an educator, and her brother ends up in prison at one point. He called her and said, hey, you know, I'm looking around and I realize, and we used to say, where are all the brothers? Well, they're up in here. They're in here. That's why they're not out there. That's why they're not with their wives. That's why they're not with their children. And while it is true that we have a crisis, we do have a crisis among African-American women and Latino women, the reality is that black men have been in crisis, in deep, deep crisis. And I think since we set foot on this soil,
Brent.
This is the first time.
And so have black women. Black women
that
were enslaved as well.
True.
Let me just say something. My husband is from the hood, formerly incarcerated, 43 years old, and to this day can only make a minimum wage. Okay? He has a daughter, he has a wife that he cares about just as much. And that's the thing. And let me say something about the Office of Women and Girls and Hillary Clinton. There's a thing that black feminists say. All the men are black and all the women are white. And this is specifically why there has been a male black initiative. If there was an office of men and boys, believe me, black men, black women, Latina women would be saying, hold up, there is a crisis for black boys. We need an initiative. And there's a crisis for black and Latina girls. And we need an initiative. And they can have two initiatives.
Oh, how about this,
right?
Here, Rosa? Oh, Rosa, here's the deal.
You don't have to separate
Absolutely.
Them.
Rosa, here's the deal. So on that particular point, and I want Brandon to jump in 1 second, but Rosa, on that point, as I'm sitting here responding on Twitter yesterday, and all these folks are talking about that, and I'm saying if there's an office, if White House office on women and girls, I'm saying, so you have an apparatus, my deal is, can there be initiative there? So what did I do? I called Valerie Jarrett, and I said, she said, you know what, Roland, she said, I haven't heard from a lot of folks in the last 5.5 years. I said, okay, Valerie, man. I said, would you meet with them? And she said, absolutely. And that's why when I hit you up and others, and I said,
right.
Okay. She said, you know what? Pick the location, we work on the date and the time, I'll be there to meet with them. And what I'm saying is, if the president sets up a White House office on women and girls, could that very well be the apparatus to do exactly what you're talking about? And are the folks who signed that letter and others, are they willing to actually say, let's make it happen?
Yes, we're ready to go. Like I told you before, it's not about separating us as a community based on gender, is understanding that racial justice includes a gendered analysis, and we're ready to roll. And in fact, I hope that particularly Girls for Gender Equity and the Black Youth Project are two on the ground grassroots organizations that are doing this work are also welcome and roll
right.
with us.
And that's why I'm saying if I'm in your position, what I would do is I would pick someplace in D.C. I would have it live stream on Google Hangout or whatever, and I would say anybody is welcome to come to have that conversation if you want to be involved in it. And I would say to the people who are sitting here on the hashtag and who are complaining, my deal is, you know what? After you get off of Twitter, say, I want to be a part of the movement as well, as opposed to just
right.
saying, well, you're sexist or you hating on black women. Brandon, go ahead.
Yeah, so 2 points. One, I think to be fair, we have seen from the African-American community and from communities of color in general, a push for the White House to do more. We haven't seen the targeted push from a gender-specific push from women to that women's office that's within the White House. But if you look at the report, Roland, the word parent is used about 90 times in the report. And when you look at the specific recommendations that are made, specifically recommendations like 4.1 and 4.2, they talk about improving outcomes for all children. It's talking about directing things towards families, directing things towards parents. And so even in the recommendations that this task force made after the first 90 days, they're mostly not gender specific or not as gender specific as you might think. And so I think it's a community program that's of course focused on one section right now, but it's going to have a benefit across any divides that would be in our community.
Lisa?
And I think that's what's missing, Mr. Andrews, in the whole project, because I read it through. I've read everything, of course. I'm not a scholar activist and going to come out here and not know my information. But I think one of the things that would be helpful is to increase the task force that you have currently outside of just philanthropic and corporations. Like I said, I think there's not enough grassroots organizers that are part of the task force, not enough actual youth organizations that are doing this work. And I think many of the women that signed the the letter are part of organizations that have been doing this work, have been successful, but are not part of even the larger task force in terms of who sits on it. Well, so maybe that would be a good place for all of us to start to get the grassroots activists on the ground over to the White House as well.
Lisa, final comment.
Well, I just think, Roland, that, I mean, first of all, I just want to say, yes, we need an initiative for women and girls. I also think that it's a smart leadership move to start at the heart of the problem, which is, or at least at the deepest part of the problem, which is the crisis among boys and men, and to begin to expand from there, to lay the groundwork through this program. And as a person of faith, I have to say that God is actually caring about both men and women, and God is happy that we are beginning to make a dent in this huge issue that we have never been able to do before.
Well, I'll say this here to all the folks who have been tweeting and throwing out all kind of names. Here's the deal. You could try that crap with me. I really don't care. The bottom line is, if you want to talk about how I'm not supporting sisters, yeah, right. You can't raise six nieces and try to say that to me. So you know what? You could take that crap somewhere else. But do me a favor. Rosa, you've done it. But Rosa, there's a whole bunch of people out there who have not actually read the report. Mm-hmm. Who have actually not gotten engaged in it and who are not asking the right questions. And so that also needs to happen. And my last point, if you're one of the folks out there, if you're one of the sisters out there and you say we need the initiative, here's the deal. Put the skin in the game as well, because at the end of the day, talking about it is one thing, doing something about it is another. Mm-hmm. Rosa, Lisa, Brandon, I certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot. We'll continue the conversation. Up next, today is Juneteenth. The last of the slaves were freed, my folks in Texas. We'll look at celebrations happening all across the country right here on News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Folks, many of us look at the Emancipation Proclamation as the day that American slaves were free. That's actually not true. It was really only in those, most folks haven't even read the Emancipation Proclamation. That's only in those states that seceded from the Union. Actually, slavery continued in America after that. But more importantly, it continued for 2.5 years because word got a little late to folks across the country, like in Texas. It wasn't until the general hit the beaches of Galveston, Texas, to announce, hey, Black folks, y'all been free. That day, now known as Juneteenth, it is a state holiday in Texas, and it is the only holiday that is specifically tied to slavery. It's also been observed in 43 states, including D.C., so we want to chat about it today. Joining me on the set, we have Dr. Greg Carr, from Professor of Africana Studies at Howard University. We have Reverend Ronald Myers, Chair of the National Juneteenth Observance Foundation. He's joining us on the phone. He's from Greenwood, Mississippi. We have Cliff Robinson, founder of Juneteenth.com. He's on the phone from New Orleans. And I want to go start with you, Greg. This is a lot of field folks, they may have heard about it. I have Black people came to Texas and they went, man, what's this Juneteenth thing y'all do down here?
Right, you proud Houstonian. You
absolutely
know all about that, right?
Well, actually, former state representative Al Edwards, yes, he's in a hospital, so we wish him well.
Absolutely.
He was the one who sponsored the bill to get this to be a state holiday in Texas.
1980. Well, 79. And the governor signed it. And I think maybe 7 years before that, two other state reps had gotten the governor to at least acknowledge it.
Right.
Interestingly enough, though, as he got that bill passed, Texas made it a state holiday. First state. And as you said, 43 states. In fact, Maryland just adopted it this year. Very important, though, that Juneteenth is one of dozens of emancipation celebrations, not only around this country, but around the Caribbean and other places we had our folks were enslaved. Here in D.C., we have, of course, Emancipation Day. Mm-hmm. April the 16th. But the thing about Juneteenth really ties to self-determination. It's a brilliant kind of celebration, and it has become national and even international because our people use it as a moment to educate ourselves about what had happened and also what we must do going forward. So it's a brilliant moment.
Cliff Robinson, you actually collect the data showing how Juneteenth is being celebrated all across the country.
Yes, indeed. Good morning, Roland. Thanks for having me. We've been collecting the data and actually launched Juneteenth.com back in 1996. So we've been collecting for quite some time, and indeed, it is a worldwide celebration.
All right, let's go to Reverend Ronald Myers. And so you want this to be even broader as well.
Well, we were able to get Maryland as the 43rd state to recognize Juneteenth, and now we're trying to get legislation through Congress to make Juneteenth a national day of observance, like Flag Day or Patriot Day, not a paid federal holiday, but a special day of observance.
Greg, I've heard some people say, man, why in the world are we trying to celebrate a day when the word became late? And I keep saying, well, that's actually not what it is. The fact is this is the only real holiday that actually is tied to slavery. I mean, it. So you look at all the other holidays we have, all the other days we recognize, right. This is acknowledging something that actually is American history.
That's exactly right. In fact, you know, there are many days that are commemorated. When the Juneteenth bill passed in Texas, that same day they passed a bill to, the same bill actually, to recognize Confederate Day. So, I mean, it was, you know, it's a diverse kind of thing. But I like what Silas Floyd said at Emancipation Day. He said, may God forget my people if we forget this day. In other words, this is American history. And in fact, what just happened in Dallas this week is very interesting. Dallas City passed a resolution commemorating Juneteenth, but the brother put in some language on reparations, and they voted on it and passed it before they realized what they had done. I think that's really what folks are afraid of. Now, if we keep recognizing this, you're going to present us with a bill one day.
Folks out there, again, though, we talked about Juneteenth was actually commemorated the foundation of it really is when the slaves were freed in Galveston, Texas in 1865. Again, a couple of years after the actual signing, again, recognizing 43 U.S. states in District of Columbia. It is the oldest known celebration commemorating the ending of slavery in the U.S. Cliff Robinson, there are barbecues, there are all kinds of other things tied, typical holidays in America. But what other kinds of events take place around Juneteenth? Anything educational? What do you know about?
Certainly, and that's what's unique about Juneteenth. It's grown now to encompass everyone, and depending on what part of the country, and you're going to celebrate Juneteenth in your way. We have everything from corporate conference room celebrations down to your backyard barbecue. So it's going to be, depending on who you are and where you are, just celebrating the celebration of Juneteenth.
Ronald?
Yes, sir.
Go right ahead. In terms of what are some of the more unique Juneteenth celebrations you're familiar with?
Well, one of the things that we're doing in modern times is Juneteenth flag raising ceremony, where we honor our black vets, particularly those Civil War soldiers who fought for their freedom. And we have Juneteenth flag raisings in Boston and cities across the country. So that's something that we've been doing in terms of honoring our black vets through the raising of the Juneteenth flag.
Greg, I do think it's important, just like when it comes to MLK and MLK's national holiday, that we don't look at these things just as days, a day off, or let's have a barbecue and a get together.
That's right.
I think for a lot of people, they really do need to understand the history of this country, understand what this day means, and really understand the impact of slavery in America.
That's absolutely right, Roland. Just like Martin Luther King's birthday, Juneteenth is a moment where education is really, really a major central element of this. I mean, for example, Austin, in state capital of Texas. At one time, there were up to 30,000 people who would celebrate this, and they always had speakers. And it wasn't just black people. You're educating
right.
The country about what the history of this country is and what we must do going forward. And the Goddess of Liberty on the top of the state capital in Texas, they had a Goddess of Liberty pageant every year during Juneteenth to crown that. In fact, I had one of the winners from Galveston in my class at Howard a couple of years ago. This is American history, and everybody needs to understand it.
Well, that's why when I started this segment off, folks actually think that the Emancipation Proclamation ended slavery.
No, sir.
No, you got to read the fine print to understand what actually happened.
Right.
So Ronald Myers, Cliff Robinson, I want to thank you for joining us right here on News One Now. And I think it's safe to say, I doubt any other national television show actually talking about Juneteenth. That's why we got to have this show on TV One.
That's right.
Dr. Carr, thanks a bunch as well.
Thank you, brother.
All right, appreciate it. Folks, coming up, a woman shows up to party at her own funeral. Yeah, it's What the Hell Thursday. Natasha Eubanks and Lamont King are here, and they're asking, what in the hell is wrong with these people? Hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at News One or at Roland S. Martin, or go to the News One Facebook page. It is 16 before the top of the hour. This is News One Now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
It's birthday shout out time. Actor Bumper Johnson, known for his roles on A Different World and The Game, turns 40. Bumper. Did his family name him Bumper? Actress Zoe Saldana, who plays Nina Simone in the upcoming biopic. She turns 36. Zoe needs to go eat. She needs to go eat. She looked thin. All right. Choreographer and singer Paula Abdul turns 52. Met her when I was in L.A. a few years ago. All right, this day in history. In 1912, HBCU, Tennessee State University in Nashville, opens its doors to 247 students. In 19, that's where Richard Dent went, Hall of Fame football player. 1913, the Native Land Act passes in South Africa, severely restricting the amount of land that Native Africans could own. In 1968, over 50,000 people gathered for Solidarity Day in Washington, D.C. during the Poor People's Campaign, as originally conceived by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. All right, folks, it's What the Hell Thursday, and joining me today, young, black, and fabulous blogger Natasha Eubanks via Skype in New York. Hey, what up?
Hello, Roland.
And here in the studio, actor and television show host Lamont King. You an actor?
Yeah, sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes.
You're acting right now. All right.
Happy Juneteenth to you,
yes,
brother.
Yes, indeed. Happy Juneteenth. Yeah. Did you know about Juneteenth before today?
Yes, I did.
Natasha, you knew about it.
Absolutely. I went to school in Texas.
That's what I'm
saying. Who celebrates it the most.
Okay, that's my point, Natasha. That's what you want to say. Yeah, Roland, we Native Texans. Girl, come on, keep up.
Hey.
All right.
Hey.
How would you like to be the life of the party at your own funeral? When 53-year-old Miriam Burbank died, her daughters decided to let her go out in death the way she lived. Miriam was propped up in a chair with a case of Busch beer, a menthol cigarette in her hand, and a disco ball flashing overhead. Her daughter says she was always full of life, so they wanted the funeral to reflect that. Funeral home directors at Charbonnet Funeral Home helped them throw their mother's final party. What the hell?
I want to know, this is the mystery. How did she die? I'm shocked with the kind of life that she lived. She went so soon. You know how they say turn down for what, right? She was like, I'm laying down for what? Sit me up.
Natasha, can you imagine going to that kind of funeral and going, seriously, is she sitting up at the table?
You know what? My main concern here, you know, death is a serious subject, but my main concern when I walk into that room is, who did this wig? This is pure ratchetry.
Y'all, pull the photo up, y'all. Pull it back
up. Now, if you're going to die and be sitting up, propped up at your own funeral, get the best wiggery you can. You better go into my stash of hair and make sure it's weaved up in there properly. Don't have me sitting out there looking like ratchet. Mm-mm.
Where do you get Busch beer from? Where do you even get Busch beer from? How does that even work?
Folks.
Oh, she got the stunner shades on, too.
Kill him.
Ooh, kill him. Literally.
Oh, let me go to the next one. A Michigan man attempted the mother of all Hail Marys filled with heroin, marijuana, tobacco, three cell phones, chargers into the yard. Y'all, seriously, he threw a football packed with all of that into a prison yard. The problem is he can't throw. He like Tim Tebow. It fell between two fences. Officers arrested Christian Moore after he threw the ball. He was arraigned Tuesday in Jackson District Court on contraband charges and sent to jail on a $50,000 U.S. bond. And look, if you're going to do that, at least be able to throw the ball.
Well, that's what you call a fail Mary. That's what that is. That's the worst incomplete pass ever. Who was it, Tony Romo, you said, what was his name?
No, that was Tim Tebow.
Oh, okay. Well, at least he made the team, the jail squad.
Natasha, that's crazy.
I mean, if you're going to throw something into the jail, throw something somebody really needs. Like, you know, I don't know. I don't know what I would want, but I just know that I don't smoke. So if I'm in jail, send me some magazines and that thing. Like, roll it up and pitch the magazine. Do something. I want Vogue. Lupita's on the cover now. Send me that. Okay. Send me something I can use.
Okay,
and
first
at least
of all,
get it over the second gate.
First of all, you know Natasha, she way too old school because, see, You gotta ask for a flash drive these days. Yeah. Everybody gonna just roll up a magazine and a football.
But see, now
computer am I putting it in jail?
But see, now he's got a record, and that's more than you can say for the Houston Texans.
No, you didn't.
He went for it when he should have punted. Why didn't he just kick it over the fence?
He should have just kicked it over the fence. Come to my show dressed like a homeless man. He didn't want to sit there and crack on somebody. All right, go on there with that old Navy shirt you got on.
Yeah.
All right, then. All right, so Natasha, should the brother, think about it, how does he have a conversation in prison? Hey, man, what you in it for? I ain't throw the football too well. That was packed with some drugs into the prison.
I mean, he's
yard.
Not going to last that long in prison. It's obvious. He can't even throw a football properly. How's he going to defend himself? So I don't know what he's going to say, but he did need to say something to save his doggone life. That's all I know.
Well, he's a quarterback on the outside.
Watch something.
He'll be a tight end on the inside.
Okay. All right, then. We come back. I got more What the Hell stories with Lamont and Natasha. And maybe between the break, we'll get Lamont an actual tie and a jacket so he can look like he belong on the show. See, you start that. I mean, you start that. That's how it is. All good. All right, folks. I'm Roland Martin, News One Now. Back with more. Hey, hit me at News One or at Roland S. Martin on Twitter. I'll read some of y'all tweets when we come back. All right, then. So back in a moment.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, welcome back to News One Now on TV One. It's What the Hell Thursday and the What the Hell crew. Joining me, actor and TV host Lamont King and Natasha Eubanks with the YBF.com. Hey, Natasha, I had to pull some money out. I'm going to get this.
Oh, is that what you're doing?
Yeah. How much your haircut cost?
Oh, let me hold like 70 or 80. And now, you know.
Because, right, that's going to cover your cuts for the next two months.
Are we talking haircut? I can do yours for a dollar.
No, you can do mine for $1, because no. You got to have precision. Oh. All right, then.
Your hairline ain't precise.
Actually, it is. But you know what? Don't start. I'm going to finish. A Cobb County, Georgia mother tried to send her 9-year-old to visit his grandparents using Craigslist online rideshare feature where strangers solicit and offer rides for money. Sheila Sherry Joyner allegedly answered a rideshare. Yeah, look at the photo. Yeah. Answered a rideshare ad from a man looking to share expenses while traveling to Florida. An undercover officer made arrangements to pick up the child. Joyner had her babysitter meet the man, saying it was a friend of hers. She was arrested at her apartment and charged with contributing to the delinquency of a minor. How? What in the hell? Your kid 9. You go on Craigslist?
Well, first of all, my heart goes
money
out.
Money to send a kid across the state. How is she getting this kid across? I mean, I'm mad at her for doing this. But, I mean, when you kind of broke, it's like, you know, grandma can't take them. You think that this is a share program on Craigslist. It's valid. You think so. I mean, if Uber would lower their prices, she wouldn't have this problem.
Well, see, first of all, my heart goes out to the 9-year-old boy. And I feel for the mama. But either he's the grownest 9-year-old or she's the dumbest mama.
We don't talk
living.
About kids.
Yeah, well, that's what I say. He's grown. But she... See, here's the problem. She probably...
What's he saying? Are we there yet?
She went on Craigslist and thought Craig was going to show up. That's the problem. It's not that Craig.
Oh, no.
It wasn't that Craig.
wasn't Craig from Friday.
It's a whole nother list.
All right. A 64-year-old man in Fresno, California has been arrested for allegedly running a meth lab out of a retirement home.
Oh.
Police found 4 ounces of crystal meth, small plastic bags, and electronic scales after pulling over robbers short.
Ooh.
They then searched the suspect's home in the retirement village and found more meth, heroin, and a small meth lab. Altogether, they recovered a meth stash estimated on a street value of $1,700. Running a meth lab in a retirement home.
Hey, Breaking Bad, right?
Who is really? You've been watching too many episodes. What else is he doing at the nursing home?
Well,
goodness, it's like stinking there and everything.
Here's my whole deal. Who you selling to in the nursing home?
Nursing home people get it, and they have STDs. They have all kind of stuff going on in these nursing homes. This is probably the least of their problem.
See, Jell-O Night is popping. When he's around,
what
Jell-O
is he putting in the Jell-O? Maybe that's what he's doing.
Exactly.
He's stuffing
the
Jell-O.
What's the name of the
salmon
place?
Salmon croquettes.
The Villages at Meth Manor.
All I'm saying is, I want to know that joint because I got some relatives who will not. Y'all not staying there. It's just going to be a little too crazy there. So, Natasha, always a pleasure having you on. What the hell? Thanks a bunch. Lamont, thanks a bunch. Please call ahead and get the dress code. I mean, we'll hook you up.
Yeah.
I'll call somebody.
I need
Goodwill or something. All right, folks, tomorrow. Need a Juneteenth pocket square?
That's what I need.
Right, need a jacket first. All right, tomorrow, the stars of the new movie, Think Like a Man 2, are going to be on the show. So look forward to that. Be sure to go to news1.com for more stories and updates and checks on Lamont's wardrobe. You can check me out at rollingsmartin.com. I sell pocket squares on my website.
That's what
so
I need that.
You
I'm going
to
need
go
that.
There. All right, folks,
that.
I'm going to see y'all tomorrow. I'm going to go dress him right now. Holla!
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.